Welcome to Hot House, the podcast that goes bump in the night.
So we are back for another ultra-riveting episode of Haunt Heads, the podcast that goes bump in the night. I am Janine Mercer. I am joined here by...
Mimi Steven. Hello, as peeps.
As always, here she is. I don't know if she's going to try to freak us out again this week, good listener, but...
Well, I'm kind of still in my dark place.
The curtains are still drawn.
Yes.
The absinthe is still being sipped.
Yes.
Prepare thyself.
Yes. This week's, I think, will be very interesting to people.
Cool.
I hope, because it was really interesting to me.
Let's see here. So, what do you have going
well,
on?
Well, we're going way, 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 way back to the time of Joan of Arc.
Joan of Arc.
Yes. We're...
Do you want me to tell my joke?
Please do. Please do.
I told it off air, and
please do.
She laughed at it. So, the question was, why did they call it the Dark Ages? Because there were so many knights. But I'm bum.
That's cute. Yeah.
Here all week.
Yeah.
Try the veal, but not the roadside barbecue. Just try my veal because it's veal. I promise.
Yes. If you listened last week, we talked about...
If you listened religiously.
Yes, we were looking for the beef, right, Janine?
You have worshipped at the Chapel of Creep last year. Or last episode, not last year.
Yeah.
It was so long ago. So long ago. My memory is fading.
Oh, boy.
Okay.
So, who's going first today?
Well, I went first last time.
Yeah.
So, if you would like to go first, you are so entitled.
Okay.
To go first.
So you ready to jump right in?
Ready to jump right in, both feet.
All right. So we all know of Saint Joan of Arc, who led France to victory over the English. But have you heard of Gilles de Rais, a French nobleman who became a lieutenant and companion to Joan of Arc? Here is a tale of Gilles de Rais, nobleman, beloved follower, and right hand of Joan of Arc. Also, Satanist, kidnapper, racist, murderer. And probably a few other things I didn't add in.
He sounds charming.
Yes, he does.
The take him home to your parents type. Introduce him to Pop.
Oh, yeah. Or Methaney, Joseph. Okay, so here, Gilles de Rais was born in 1405 France.
It's probably Giles.
Okay. Giles.
Not that he's not beguiling.
All right, well. Okay, so anyway, by the age of 15, he fought in the wars of succession to the Duchy of Brittany. Then for the Duchess of Anjou against the English in 1427. There he fought at Joan of Arc's side. He continued to fight at her side until her capture when he returned to his home in Brittany. Giles, whatever, was incredibly wealthy through inheritance from both sides of his parentage and through marriage. However, he was very much the spendthrift. He liked beautiful things. He spent so much money and sold a lot of his lands. So his family, his wife, intervened by asking the king to restrict him from selling off any more lands. So he wasn't allowed to sell off his lands anymore. So he then turned to Satanism, hoping to resurrect the devil and to be rewarded with riches.
What? I can't sell any of my fucking lands?
Yep, so here comes
here
the
go.
Devil. Whee! Okay, so it is believed his debauchery began about 1426. He would have his trusted servants go and grab a child that was all alone and bring them to him. It is said he would inflict horrible torture on them. It is said he would sever heads with dirks, daggers, and knives slowly and painfully. Hmm. Sometimes he would hit them over the head or strangle them. Sometimes they were hung from pegs or hooks. However, just before they died, he would sodomize his victims. Sometimes even after death. So he was a necrophiliac.
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, charming fella.
Yeah. So he preferred boys, but if boys were not available, he would use girls. But he would use them as if they were boys.
Oh.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Out of the most beautiful of the murdered boys, he kept their heads. Giles was so fascinated by the act of death, he would let a child slowly bleed out and he would become aroused. The bodies of the children were burned and are buried. During this time, his wealth was disappearing and he was getting desperate. So, being desperate, he tried to reconstitute his fortune and he turned to Satanism and alchemy. Now, he had a servant who was very trusted and went up to him and said, Giles, Sir Giles, I can tell you how to get the devil. I can, and he will be rewarded with many riches and gold. So the servant said the demon's name was Baron, and he could get Giles all the gold he wanted.
Oh.
So conjuring Baron, Giles would offer his victims eyes, hearts, body parts. However, Giles never offered up his own soul. He still believed in the church and God. It said he killed 150 children, but some believe it was more like 800.
Oh, wow.
Then in September of 1440, Giles was arrested. During his trial, he pled not guilty. The ecclesiastical court found him guilty of heresy and sodomy. And then the civil court sentenced him to death.
Heresy?
Yes. What did I say?
Heresy.
Did I? Heresy. Okay. Heresy. He was hanged, then burned at the stake. Is that the end? Perhaps not. Some theorize that his crimes were exaggerated and are made up. After all, he had quite a bit of land. He also was coerced, as many were during this time, to confess. But what happened to his lands? They went to the Duke of Bethany. So, politically, you know, maybe they wanted to do away with him to get his lands.
Mm.
Or, could he have been accused because of his lavish lifestyle? Or could he have been accused because of his connection to Joan of Arc?
Mm.
Those were strange times. If this tale is true, he was probably the most horrible murderer of all time. Maybe even next to Vlad Dracul. Mm. Now, apparently, many of the French people believe that he was mischarged, that he should not have been charged, that these were all trumped up charges. Mm-hmm. Because of how things were handled back then, and with the church being so greedy and wanting lands and riches and things. And a lot of people also think because of his close connection to Joan of Arc that he was bewitched as she was. So, very interesting story. There were, I cut down some of the gore.
So he was Joan of Arc's right-hand man?
Yeah, he fought right next to her, and they were compatriots.
God.
Yeah, he was a lieutenant. And he was apparently quite a fighter. Very good at it. And he started at age 15.
Huh.
So, you know, really young. And he married his wife, who was very wealthy at age 15. And it didn't say, I didn't read anything about him having his own family, kids, or anything.
Yeah.
Just that little blurb about her, but I'm sure there's a lot more because there was a lot of articles to go through. I just went through three.
Wow. Yeah.
But I don't know. He wasn't that good of a looking man from his pictures. I mean, maybe in those times he was, but they, and everything I read, they said he was a dandy and a spendthrift. But yet, there's a lot of people who do not believe the charges against him.
A dandy.
So, yeah. He liked the finer things.
Oh, well.
So,
I just love all that old terminology.
Yeah. So that was kind of macabre, wasn't it?
It was kind of macabre. It was a lot of macabre. Yeah.
I didn't hear any ooing from you.
I mean, you know, when you start to bring in necrophilia, kind of gets a little bit higher on the creeptastic scale.
Yep, it does. I'm going to have to go deeper, I think. You weren't too creeped out by it.
That, compared to the cannibal, the meat guy, the what's his name?
Yeah, Joseph Matheny.
Yes, compared with him, I mean, this guy was not... I don't know if it maybe has something to do with the fact that it was set more in modern day, and that's why it was more affecting.
Mm-hmm.
Because for some reason, it seems like it makes more sense that there would be so many people slaughtered back then
mm-hmm.
for, like, no reason, and nobody would really, like, question it. It was just like, yeah, people die all the time here. You know, look, that guy has leprosy. All the parts are falling off of him. That's just what happens.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah.
So that was my story.
So let's, okay.
I gotta go darker, I guess.
The last creep scale was 6 out of 10. So I think this time I was probably only out of 3.
Oh, that hurts, Janine.
Sorry.
All right, I'm gonna have to continue my macabre search.
And I will continue narrating disclaimers for the beginnings of all of these episodes. Because that's just what I do. That's how I do. So my neighbor, Dave, came back
mm-hmm.
from Ireland, Scotland, England, all the lands.
Good.
Got back safely. They had a great time over there. They had some good shows. Very few snafus. It sounded like it was a pretty smooth trip. So
good.
So that was good. I was happy for him. He did bring me something back this trip.
He did.
That was entirely appropriate for me.
Oh.
I don't know if you know this, but the London Bridge in medieval times, you know, they would display the heads of their enemies on mm-hmm. spikes.
Right.
So Dave brought back the story to me of how they would do that.
Oh.
And he told me that, you know, he saw the bog men, you know, the mummies that were encased in the boggy earth, and they're like all like gnarled, and they're really cool to look at. If you've never seen a picture of the bog men, you should really go look at those mummies because they're very, very cool. You know, when you take a human body and you put it in certain types of conditions, those conditions affect those bodies differently. So, yeah, super interesting. But I thought it was very sweet of him to bring me back creepy macabre stories.
I think it's great.
True
friendship.
Yeah, true friendship. Yes. Yeah, I thought it was pretty awesome. You know, because bringing something back, it doesn't always have to be something that's tactile. And from a narrative standpoint, I mean, a story for me is worth so much more than some, you know, little random trinket. So
yeah.
Although I still am missing that voodoo doll.
Oh.
Oh well, I'll get there someday.
We'll have to go to New Orleans and get you one.
someday. Okay, so let's see here. So my piece this week is Bird of Death: An Exploration of Vampiric Folklore and Legend.
Cool.
So if you like vampires, I got some vampires here for you.
Love vampires. Yeah. Find them very sexy.
Now, please tell me that you are not a member of the Twilight Camp.
Actually, no, I didn't like the movies.
Okay, good. You can stay.
Oh, thank you.
No, there's a t-shirt that I frequently see advertised on Facebook, and I was a huge fan of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Me too!
And Joss Whedon in general.
Yes!
Whedon is the man.
Yes.
But it says, and then Buffy staked Edward the end. And I want that shirt so bad. So bad.
Because it totally sums up. He just was not my view of what a vampire is. No, he didn't do anything for me. My heart did not bound.
I honestly think that Buffy, for lack of a better word, Buffy ruined me. As far as all of these other, like, vampire myths, blah, blah, blah. Because there was something about the way that the information was presented that it made sense.
Okay.
Like, of course when you stake a vampire, it turns to dust. You know?
Right.
Of course when you, you know, when they're exposed to sunlight, they combust. You know, of course that's something that happens. Of course they don't have any breath. So, like, all of these tropes that have been brought through, you know, from the very earliest accountings of, you know, who is Dracula? Who is Nosferatu? Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've ever seen the film Nosferatu.
Mm-hmm, I have.
But that talkie, just really, it's an amazing piece of cinema. It's just amazing. I just love it. It's creepy in all the right ways.
It was incredibly creepy.
Yeah.
And I always romanticized Dracula, so...
Oh.
Because I saw the 1940s Dracula movies all my life, and I was always enamored of them.
Yeah.
And then it wasn't until later that I watched Nosferatu, and it was like, well, that's not my idea of what Dracula should be.
Yeah, and that vision of... this feral being, you know, that was not what people thought vampires were.
Yeah.
Vampires were suave and, you know, they seduced their victims and, you know, whatever. Nosferatu just let it all hang out. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm a vampire motherfucker and I'm going to, you know, eat your face off while you're sleeping. Like, that was Nosferatu. Whereas, you know, if you look at Bram Stoker's Dracula... Well, that was very much, you know, seducing women and...
Are you talking about the one with undercover. Gary Oldman?
Oh, I meant the book.
Oh, okay.
I actually never saw the movie.
I thought we were talking about movies.
I actually never saw the movie, no.
Oh, you should. He did really well in it.
Oh, did he?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm...
The rest of it I didn't care for, but his portrayal, I thought, was really good.
I mean, I'm a huge fan of, like, the Hammer horror. Like, all the early, like, The Mummy, The Wolfman, Frankenstein's Monster, you know, like, those films really put the creature in such a light that that creature was almost humanized.
Right.
You know, and that I think is the really fascinating thing when we talk about Buffy the Vampire Slayer, how that show took the vampire and put it in this place of... I am a creature of the night. Yes, I require, you know, blood to survive. Yes, but also internally suffering because, you know, Angel had a soul.
Right.
You know, was cursed with a soul by the gypsies. So he had to live with that soul and he had to live with everything that he had done throughout his entire life.
Right.
And so that idea of the vampire is almost human.
Right. And the movies of today really don't.
They really don't.
They've lost that connection.
Yeah, they really have. And I mean, you know, when you look at shows like True Blood?
Mm-hmm.
Or True Bloods, you know, the Twilight series.
Yeah.
I think there was another one that they
there
did.
There was a Wolfman one that they did. Boy, I can't remember the name of it. But I kind of like that one.
Yeah.
But I only watched the first season.
They had one, I don't know if it's still on Netflix anymore, but... It's called The Gates.
And yes, I watched that.
And
I actually
think it's
like
only
that.
One season.
Yes.
And then they cancel it. They don't,
yes,
they don't
I know.
Have it anymore. But
and that was good.
But it was a good,
That was good.
And the portrayals of vampires and like creatures of the night.
Yeah, and it was
really
unexpected a lot of the time.
Yeah, yeah. No, it was really well written and I mean, the actors, the actresses mm-hmm. did a really bang up job. I don't understand why they don't have it anymore.
I know, I don't
honestly.
Either.
Honestly. Maybe it's just our opinion.
Yeah.
Maybe. Our opinion doesn't matter.
Well, it's nice that we actually kind of come
yeah.
together on most mm-hmm. things.
Yeah, I don't remember the last time we didn't come together on something.
Nope.
I don't think there was something, actually. We've been pretty stable as far as, like, be nice to the fucking ghosts.
That's right.
We like vampires.
Show respect.
And Wolfman. Those two things. Okay, so, let's see here. Perhaps one of the most influential horror films of all time is F.W. Murnau's Nosferatu, an expressionist horror film released in 1922. It was considered an unauthorized adaptation of Bram Stoker's Dracula, and Stoker's heirs actually sued Murnau, ordering that all copies of the film be destroyed. But, as is the case with anything like this, a copy slipped under the radar.
Yep.
And Nosferatu still lives on today with a ravenous cult following. But the same can be said for vampire folklore. There's a reason why Nosferatu holds the spot for the third best reviewed horror film of all time on Rotten Tomatoes. People are still watching, enthralled by the cinematography of a silent, black and white film that first premiered in America 7 years after its release in Germany. Isn't that insane?
Wow.
Since the release of Nosferatu, vampire legend has been on the forefront of popular culture. From Fright Night in 1985 and Van Helsing 2004 to Leslie Nielsen's vampire comedy Dead and Loving It 1995 and Joss Whedon's Buffy the Vampire Slayer 1997 to 2003, the story of the vampire and the struggles that one without a pulse might face enthrall us. They captivate us and make the small hairs on the backs of our necks stand up. Well, aside from that Leslie Nielsen movie anyway. That wasn't really
That was
creepy.
A funny one.
It was a funny one.
A very funny one.
But vampire folklore isn't always about entertainment and celebrating characters that embody the truly tortured spirit of a creature of the night. Vampire legends have existed for millennia. The Mesopotamians, Hebrews, ancient Greeks, and Romans all shared cultural folklore tales of demonic entities bent on drinking the blood of the living. In fact, beliefs regarding these legends were so strong that they created mass hysteria that led to executions. Prior to the Industrial Revolution, many believed that those who suffered from tuberculosis were actually vampires in disguise. Individuals with TB experienced a loss of muscle mass, exhaustion, lack of appetite, a chronic cough that produced blood, redness and swelling around the eyes causing light sensitivity, low body temperature, chills, and malaise, and when one member of the family came down with TB, often the whole family would be affected. When a family member passed, they'd be buried for a short time and then dug up and their corpse would be examined. Blood in the mouth, paleness of the skin with no general decomposition, or bloating of the corpse were all signs that their family member was actually a vampire, feeding on them nightly and stealing their health. Now, we understand that bloating is a natural part of decomposition, mm-hmm. and TB is often accompanied by a chronic cough that produces bloody sputum.
Right.
But early on in many cultures around the world, the fear of having a loved one turn into a vampire was a very real thing. That was something that they really feared. Rabies was also often linked to outbreaks of vampirism, which would cause the affected to become senile, be light sensitive, as well as sensitive to garlic. And there's that nasty propensity to bite people. So that was a thing.
Yeah.
Rabies and tuberculosis were often mistaken for vampirism, but according to folklore tales from Greece, Romania, England, and Japan, a person can become a vampire not only by being bitten, but also if they ate of a sheep that had been killed by a wolf, were the child of a woman who was once looked at by someone who was a vampire, were a nun who stepped over a body that had been exhumed or had not been buried, had teeth when they were born or when the baby was, if the baby was born, you know, dead, stillborn, if they had teeth. If they practiced sorcery, were an illegitimate child, or their parents were illegitimate, died before being baptized, were excommunicated from the church, were the seventh son of the seventh son, I'm sure you've heard that one, mm-hmm. had red hair, look out all ye Irishmen everywhere, you're all vampires, were suddenly killed or committed suicide, renounced their religion, the list just goes on and on and on. So, in these trying times, in order to free themselves from the vampire curse, the afflicted would have to do one of the following. Either dig up the corpse of a suspected vampire, cut out its heart, and burn it on a sacred stone. Then you would take the ashes and you would mix them with water or wine and drink them. That was supposed to be the cure-all.
Yeah.
The other option was to burn and grind the bones of a vampire and blend it with flour, make bread, and then eat the bread. So those were the two options. Ingestion being something that you just had to do. But neither of those suggestions seemed particularly appealing to me.
No. Very weird.
Yeah. There were also ways to protect yourself against a vampire attack. Some vampire folklore states that a small bag of salt should be carried at all times. According to vampire legend, if salt is spilled on the ground, the vampire will have no choice but to stop and count each individual grain. Apparently that's a thing that they
I've heard that before, actually. And it was in some weird movie, too.
Oh, wasn't it?
Yeah, I can't remember the name of it, though.
Apparently in a pinch you can use birdseed.
Oh, haven't heard that one.
So birdseed can also be substituted. It's also said that, quote-unquote, sealing your home with salt can protect against creatures of the night or against those who might bring harm, period. Sprinkling salt around door and window frames will keep vampires and other demonic creatures at bay, so long as they're not explicitly invited to enter. You remember all those instances on Buffy the Vampire Slayer where Spike tries to enter the Summer's home and he can't.
Yeah.
You know, Angel tries to enter and kill Willow when he's bad, and he can't because he hasn't been invited in. Totally a thing that carried over. In Romania, it is believed that a young boy dressed in all white and sent into a cemetery on a white horse can find vampires beneath the earth.
Hey.
If the horse stops atop a grave, you've found a vampire. I'm sure it has little to nothing to do with whatever greenery might be growing on the top of that grave that the horse might find particularly entrancing.
Hmm.
Nothing to do. In Slavic society, it's believed that the spirit lingers for 40 days after death. In southwest Romania, in the small village of Craiova, in February of 2004, police investigated a case of grave robbing. Recently deceased villager Petra Toma had been dug up and impaled. According to his family, he'd become a vampire. They believed that Toma was returning from the grave each night and drinking their blood because family members felt ill and tired, feelings that they were just unable to shake. 6 weeks after his funeral, his corpse was dug up, and upon exhumation, they found that his hands were no longer clasped. Rather, they were at his sides, and his mouth was full of blood. The villagers did what their beliefs dictated. They used a pitchfork to remove Toma's heart, and finding that there was also blood in that, they burnt the heart and mixed the ashes with water, sharing the mixture among themselves. Instantly, they felt better, and the family was no longer plagued by nightly visits from Toma.
Is it possible he wasn't dead when they buried him?
You know, I'm not sure. I mean, it seems like they don't really have a complete grasp on what exactly the decomposition process is. And,
but that was 2004.
Yeah, 2004.
I suppose.
I guess it depends. I mean, if they live in a place that's rather remote.
Right.
I mean, I don't know how remote Craiova is.
No idea.
But, yeah, if we happen to have any listeners from Romania, please chime in. Be interesting to know. Now, this case is not unique in and of itself. There were many people of many different cultures throughout history who believed that vampires were real, and because they were a real threat, certain precautions were taken when preparing a body for burial. Those with birth defects, such as cleft palates or other deformities, might be singled out. In this case, the body is pierced through the heart, or quote-unquote the trunk of the body, using an iron stake. It's said that iron is a natural ward against evil and will pin the vampire to the earth, preventing him from rising from the grave. This is also true in Irish folklore. You can use iron to repel fairies.
Mm-hmm.
Otherworldly creatures are often repelled by iron.
Fairies also don't like bells.
Really?
It hurts them, yeah.
Oh.
My sister told me that.
Huh. Yeah, I know. Where I come from, I mean, this did not happen yesterday. It was not a thing that probably happens now, but there are people in rural communities in Newfoundland that actually still believe that like sewing little pieces of paper with Bible verses on them that have been blessed by the priest into their children's clothing protects them from fairy attacks.
Oh.
If you take a piece of hard bread or hard tack is this very, very hard, very dense bread that you actually have to mix with water or like Dunkin' tea to soften because you'll break your fucking teeth off trying to eat it any other way. But they'll actually take pieces of that and put it in their pockets. And then when they go out walking late at night, they'll scatter the bread. And then that distracts the fae and allows them to pass peacefully. Because essentially they say anytime you enter a wood or any sort of, you know, tree-lined place, you are subject to fairy attacks and you're in danger. So it's of the utmost importance to protect yourself.
Okay.
Take precautions, as it were.
Got it.
In other cases, bricks or stones were forced into the corpse's mouth, effectively breaking the jaw and preventing the vampire from feeding.
Oh.
A more familiar practice to modern-day vampire aficionados will likely be the use of garlic as protection.
Mm-hmm.
Vampires are said to despise garlic, and in many instances, the mouth of a corpse might also be filled with garlic. Today, there are people who claim to be vampires, there are people who drink the blood of the living, but they're not the real deal. They're not actual vampires. Popular authors like Stephen King and Anne Rice have written about these blood-drinking creatures of the night, but a story is just that. And in the case of vampirism, I think we can effectively drive a stake through it and put it to rest, because I don't think it's an actual thing. But, you know, just in case, I think I'll sprinkle a little salt before I go to bed tonight. That seems good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't have to worry. I cook with a lot of garlic. I love garlic.
Even now, Mimi can repel the strongest vampire.
Well, yeah.
So, you previously mentioned that the Giles was worse than Vlad the Impaler. And I did a little tiny bit of research on Vlad the Impaler before I started talking about vampires, because, of course, you know, you have to. And I did it more so, I think, for my friend at the little shop who's from Romania and, you know, captured my heart with his accent.
Oh.
Vlad the Impaler, or Vlad Tepes, also known as Vlad Dracul.
Mm-hmm.
That was Vlad II. So that was actually Vlad III's father. So Dracul, roughly translated, is Vlad the Dragon. Well, in 1431, Vlad's father, Vlad Dracul, was admitted to King Sidmund's Order of the Dragon for bravery in fighting the Turks. It was like this order of fraternal knights, and he was admitted into their ranks. And then Vlad III became Vlad Draculea, which roughly translated, Ulea is son of the dragon.
Okay.
Yeah. So the word Drac also means devil in Romania.
Okay.
Yeah. So I don't know. I just thought that was kind of interesting.
Yeah.
The Order of the Dragon.
Well, I wonder if, you know, Giles got some of his antics from stories about
Vlad. I don't know. It's entirely possible.
Interesting times they lived in.
Right. I am still just reeling over the fact that he was associated with Joan of Arc.
Yeah.
And fought alongside Joan of Arc.
Yeah.
And was doing all of the shit.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Like, it is.
Did she not notice? Like, did she not know? Did she know and she didn't care?
Well, I don't think he started killing until she got captured.
Oh, okay.
And was arrested and killed.
Hmm.
Because it says that when she got arrested, that's when he went back home to his lands.
Hmm.
But during that time, he was really revered as a wonderful soldier and a godly man.
Yeah, things changed.
Maybe he just saw so much fighting and he went nuts.
Oh, yeah, that could be. One of the first reported PTSD cases.
Yeah.
No, it's, yeah, that's just kind of crazy to me.
It is.
I'm really going to have to look him up. Read a little bit more about him. Because I didn't even know he existed.
Oh, there was a lot of information. But,
nice.
Yeah, I didn't go super deep or anything. I just kind of glossed over.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Who knows? Maybe some of our listeners would want us to go deeper.
No, you never know.
Yeah. Maybe there are people
out there even prettier than me who want to know even more.
Yeah, share your story. Share your ideas.
Yeah. Please, please, please send them along.
Yeah.
I think we decided last time that we're going to figure out something with the Brumder Mansion.
Yep.
Either we're just going to pay for a room and we're going to, well, I'm going to stay up all night. And Mimi's probably going to fall asleep.
Yeah.
But it's okay. Because, you know, when the apparitions start coming around, I'll throw something at her.
Sounds good.
She'll wake up. It'll either be an overnight excursion, or it'll be just a tour experience, yeah, or something.
Well, my sister's coming in August 8th, and she would love to go there.
Oh, there
so
you go.
Maybe we could have her join.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah, and if we actually get a room there, we can try out the omelets.
Yeah.
And see if there's a hot omelet,
yep,
and a cold omelet.
Yep, absolutely.
At this point, I'm going to be very disappointed if both the omelets are hot.
I know.
I'll be equally as disappointed if both the omelets are cold.
I know. I want to go to the basement and see if Bob is still on there.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
He can pinch my butt if he wants.
Nice. All right. Well, on that note, I think we're good for this week, guys. We will see you next week for more Haunt Heads. As usual, send along your paranormal stories and folklore tales. We'll read them live on the show. It'll be awesome.
Absolutely.
All right. So thanks for listening, guys, and you enjoy your week.
Peace out.
Peace out.